we had the excellent opportunity to talk to one of the biggest names in production. I mean, being producers ourselves, this guy is an idol of ours. In fact, he was able to produce albums such as Nirvana's Nevermind, which really put them on the map.
I was going to say, I feel like he really did put Nirvana, like he had his
Absolutely.
Hand in putting Nirvana on the map. Yeah, what else? He's done Green Day, he's done
Foo Fighters.
Everything, every big band, you name it. And he's also the drummer of Garbage. So we caught up with Butch Vig a few weeks ago, and he had this to say.
Hey, this is Butch Vig from Garbage, and you're listening to Sound Sessions. I'm only happy when it rains.
Welcome to another episode of Sound Sessions here at WGN Radio. Today we are joined by super producer and music virtuoso Butch Vig of the band Garbage. They have a new album out with Strange Little Birds, and we welcome Butch Vig. How's it going, Butch?
It's going pretty well.
Excellent, excellent.
Hey, Butch, yeah, this is Kevin. Such an honor to speak with you, first of all. You are just a legend in the industry, so we really appreciate you joining us. You know, so I wanted to get into, like, you just told us, or you have a record that just came out. Maybe, I don't want to give anything away, maybe more music coming. You're on another tour coming up here. How does Garbage and how does Butch Vig keep on doing what they're doing?
Well, I mean, we really dug deep into recording Strange Little Birds. It was quite an experience for the four of us in Garbage. I think we felt really free doing it. At this point, being on our own label, you know, there's really no one looking over our backs or putting pressure on us except ourselves. And we made a fairly dark, cinematic-sounding record, and it kind of inspired us to even go into some further U-turn directions, I think, on the next record. So at least we you know, we're going to be touring on and off this whole year, but I think we're going to make another record. We're already talking about some of the ideas for it.
You know, that's so great, and being such like a super producer and, you know, being in all these groups and having such like a wealth of knowledge and influence in the music industry, where do you find the inspiration to write and record this music? Is the best place still in your basement or in your bedroom, or are you still finding more inspiration in the studio nowadays?
Well, we recorded a lot of Strange Little Birds at my home studio, which is basically a glorified bedroom studio. There's really no soundproofing, and you know, I have to pick moments when I can play drums or we can turn the amps up, because there's, you know, the neighbors complain if it's too late at night. So
we
try to record from, you know, from around 11 a.m. until around dinner time when I see some of the neighbors showing up, then we try to tone it down a little bit. But it's kept it very relaxed recording here. You know, you never feel like there's any clock ticking or any pressure, so it really gives us a lot of freedom to experiment a lot and try a lot of different ideas, and if they don't work out, we just can them and, you know, and move on to something else. And I know it was very liberating for Cheryl, especially. She felt like she could just be very spontaneous with her writing, and we tried to be what she terms less fussy, you know, just record things and kind of leave them where they're at and not go back and manipulate them or redo them or rework them. And so I think it was good. We finished Strange Little Birds at our engineer Billy Bush studio in Atwater Red Ridge, and that's a proper studio. It's a great mix room and a little overdub room, and it's soundproofed, and, you know, we can go and work really long hours there. But the bulk of Strange Little Birds was done here, sitting looking over Silver Lake.
Excellent. Now, I want to know, being a producer and also playing drums in Garbage, and I'm assuming you're kind of doing both, you're wearing both hats, is that, what's that like for you? Is that exhausting, or is it something you really kind of thrive on?
It's interesting, because I definitely wear two different hats when I'm producing someone like the Foo Fighters or Green Day or Against Me or whoever. It's my job to remember it's their vision, and I really need to help them find their vision and get great performances and help them with the songs. But at the end of the day, it's their music, and in Garbage, it's my music and my band and or our music, and I can write a song, I can play drums, I can engineer, I can produce, I can play guitar, keyboards. All of us have a lot of different roles that we play in Garbage, and I think because of that sort of creative freedom, that's one of the things that's kept us together for 20 years.
That's so true. You know, you're also a fellow Midwestern boy yourself, and I really enjoy that about, you know, you feel some kind of pride when you see somebody from the Midwest grow to the ranks that you do. And I always wanted to know, I mean, being a fan of yours for quite some time now, why didn't you take your creative spirit to somewhere like L.A. or New York? What made you stay in the homestead in Madison, Wisconsin?
You know, I had a lot of offers to move to L.A. or New York or London and set up a studio and really work with only big-time clients is what some of the potential managers told me back in the 90s. And I really didn't have any interest in doing that because I liked sort of being left to my own devices. I kind of felt like recording a lot in Madison, which is my, you know, Smart Studios is my primary recording studio for many years.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just you're left alone. You're off the beaten track. It's not easy to get to if you're from New York or L.A. And so it just gives you kind of more creative freedom in a way where you don't start second guessing yourself or you start getting a lot of outside opinions. And I always thought it was healthy to be in the Midwest, you know, to kind of, like I said, be left to our own devices.
I kind of want to talk about that. You mentioned, you know, you were getting all these offers to go out west. First, can you speak to kind of how you've gotten to where you are? You know, I read that, and it's obvious the hard work is in your blood, but you opened up Smart Studios, you were driving a cab, you were playing in Spooner, and now you fast forward and you're recording some of these huge bands, you're in a huge band yourself. How have you gotten to where you are right now, being a sought-out name in the industry? And I guess also maybe you can speak to a way that you have found to stand out in the industry?
Well, I think one of the reasons I've been successful is I've been very lucky that I've worked with some amazing artists. You know, you're only as good as the artist is really in their songs. I was lucky to develop really strong relationships with people like Billy Corgan, you know, where I really pushed him and he pushed me right back. And we tried to really raise the bar on recording, especially when we did Siamese Dream. You know, we had a vision in our heads and
great album.
Practically killed each other getting there, but, you know, in the end, it was worth it. And I don't know. I mean, I've always had a fairly strong work ethic. I guess I probably got that from my dad. I mean, they say there's sort of that stoic Midwestern work vibe, but it's somewhat true, at least for me. You know, I don't really have a lot of hobbies. I just consider music my main love of life other than my family, and I just really I throw myself into it all the time. It doesn't matter what kind of project it is, I get obsessed with it. And I think that's really how you have to approach it, your art. If you really want to be successful at it, you just have to immerse yourself in it 100%.
Sure. And it almost sounded like you were selling yourself short. You said, you know, you've been lucky that these bands have come to you, but it's obvious that there's a reason that these bands came to and continue to come to you, you know.
Well, part of that is, I think I'm also easygoing, and that's also from my Midwest upbringing. So
sure,
it's easy to, I've always had a really good rapport with the bands I've produced, and I think I'm able to push them and get things out of them with a non-confrontational way, and so they feel good about what they're doing. And I mean, sometimes making records or recording a song can be very difficult, and there's a lot of obstacles you have to overcome, and I think half of that battle is psychological. It's not just the snare drum sound or the tone of the guitar. It's trying to get the right performances. I think I've been very good at getting into bands' heads and from the psychological aspect and getting them to feel comfortable. You know, I think that's a big part of what I do.
That's a really good point because they're
really interesting.
There is a lot of, you know, I don't want to say it, but ego when it comes to writing music. And, you know, a lot of people take personal care of their own sound. And, you know, I've heard and read in interviews that you've done that, you know, you were with bands and you were doing hundreds and hundreds of overdubs and re-recording of instruments and just constant back and forth. How do you kind of, you know, is it the Midwestern charm or what's the other secret that comes to, you know, controlling and containing that kind of attitude when it comes to putting out a good album? Because I feel like if, you know, you were in a fight with a band or if there was, you know, a clash between producers and stuff, it could be seen on the album, not coming through. But all your albums have this kind of warm and well-calculated feeling. So how do you control those artists and push them to make the best music that they can make?
Well, this kind of goes to what I said before. It's up to me to sort of understand their vision, and then I have to get them comfortable so they'll listen to some outside opinions. And you know, hopefully when I suggest something, they're going to listen to it because they trust me at that point. And trust me, I've been in some huge battles in the studio, and many I've won and many I've lost. And I usually try to – the ones I need to win, I usually save up, and I'll let some of the smaller ones fall by the wayside if I think that they're
trying battles.
To keep count of who's winning what – you know, what arguments. But at the end of the day, you know, a song has to sort of connect to a listener in an emotional way, whether it's the singing or the lyrics or the vibe or the groove of the track, or a combination of those things. And I always use a term called focus. It needs to be focused. Sometimes I think there's extraneous parts that don't need to be in there. You know, sometimes the performances don't feel right to me, and I've had bands at the 11th hour go back and recut a song in the context of a record because one or two of the tracks didn't sound like they felt good enough to me, and that's hard to do when, you know, when you think you've already nailed something, and then in hindsight you go, you know what, it could be better. And sometimes that's all I say is, you know what, that could be better, and then let the artist, they think about it, go, you know what, it could be, let's see if we can top it.
That's really interesting, too. That's got to be tough, too, to say at times. But, you know, working with the bands that you have, I guess it's, you know, you are
telling,
at that level. Right.
Telling Billy Corgan, you know, that could be a little bit better if you just, you know, strum that.
But I want to know, are there any bands, well, first of all, who are you listening to nowadays, and who are you kind of currently impressed by? And is there anyone that you haven't had the chance to work with that you would like to?
Oh, God, there's so much great new music out there. I love Courtney Barnett's music. That came out last year.
Absolutely.
I like the new Beach House record.
Oh, yeah.
I like Parquet Courts are awesome. They sort of remind me of a combination of the Pixies and Pavement, but they're a great punk rock band. There's so much great new music. I have a tendency to, these days, listen to a lot of, like, internet blog stations. I find that they're... a lot of the really cool underground stuff is being played on the internet. You know, it's not necessarily filtered into mainstream radio. And there's just so much great music out there. You do have to weed through a lot of stuff sometimes to find tracks that you like. You know, there's way more music out available to the public now than there was 20 years ago, you know, just because it's easier to record on laptops and wherever. And a lot of young bands are way smarter about how to record. So if you're just searching for something new, like I said, you got to sometimes wade through a lot of stuff, a lot of music until you find something that you really fall in love with.
Absolutely. I want to know also, just maybe we can briefly speak on this, you know, since late in 2015 and up to now, we've had a lot of losses, big losses in the music industry, whether it be Bowie, Prince, Fife Dog, Lemmy. Had you ever had any experiences with any of these guys or had a chance to even have a conversation with any of them?
I met Lemmy years ago. I met Bowie. We played a garbage show with like a VH1 fashion show years ago with Bowie, and just met him backstage, and he was super cool and super charming. We're all quite intimidated by him just because he's David Bowie, but he was really lovely when he came out and chatted with us. Years ago, I produced a band from Minneapolis, Sometimes Why, and I played drums on some of the tracks on the record. When they had a record release, we went up and they played a show at First Avenue. And after the show, Prince was there, and he said, hey, one of his crew guys came up and said, hey, can we use your drums? Prince wants to jam after the show. And I'm like, what? Sure. But then they kicked everybody out and made everybody come back in. There was a huge line to get in, and we never got back in until after the show to get my drums. So I actually didn't see him play.
Oh, that's a bummer.
But they did use my drum kit that night.
That's hilarious.
It's so wild. So, you know, another thing is, we'll keep you with one last question here. Thank you again for joining us today. You know, growing up close to Chicago, there must have been some really great memories and obviously some great times spent here. What were some things that you still do when you come here and can even walk the streets now? Or what's some things you'd like to touch back on to when you come to the city of Chicago?
Well, I've played many, many shows there over the years. We were just back there a couple months ago. We had a party at the Metro for the Smart Studio Story documentary on our studio that's coming out this fall. And I love Joe Shanahan. I've played there with my band Spooner, my band Firetown. I've been there with the Pumpkins and Nirvana. Garbage has played there a bunch of times. But there's a bunch of places in Chicago that we've played over the years. And the funniest thing is every time we're there, when we're rolling out of town in the bus or a van, we always stop at White Castle.
Yes.
Because it's been a tradition for over 20 years. So you just got to get a bag of sliders as you head out on the highway.
Oh, yeah.
It's meant to be. I love that. We're one and the same, yep. Butch. Well, you know, that was Butch.
Yeah.
That was Butch Vig. Be sure to check out Strange Little Birds and keep your eyes peeled for the Smart Studio documentary coming out this fall. Butch, it was an absolute pleasure having you on Sound Sessions today. Thank you again.
Right on. Thanks, you guys.
So there you have it. That was our interview with Butch Vig of Garbage and mega record producer. Just what an awesome guy.
Couldn't have been nicer, to be honest.